Support for WYPR comes from University of Maryland Medical System, where world-class doctors are pioneering immunotherapy that's helping to stop cancer in its tracks. And with screenings and advanced treatments across the state, it's cancer care made for Marylanders. Learn more at umms.org/cancer.
Good afternoon and welcome to Midday. I'm Erica Kane. Bus, train, or car, transportation gets us where we need to go. And Baltimore residents have options. There's the Baltimore Light Rail Link, the free Charm City Circulator, the Metro Subway Link, and more than four dozen local Link bus lines. But talk to anyone who relies on public transit for their day-to-day transportation needs, and you'll hear some complaints. Late buses, infrequent schedules, limited coverage, among some of the complaints. I spoke to some commuters yesterday in Park Heights. This is what Dolores had to say.
It could be better. If you look at the schedule, the bus, like, take it too long, then they go back to the other, say, 14 minutes and all that. Then it says zero, and then it says something else, so I had to wait. It was taking too long. I'd be late, like the 30. It'll always be late, taking too long.
Simply put, so today on Midday, we're talking about transit, how it serves our area, and how it could work better. My first guest today is a transit advocate who has long pushed for better funding for public transportation, Brian O'Malley, longtime CEO and president of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance. He joins me here in Studio A. Welcome back to the show, Brian.
Thanks, Erica. Great to be back.
Absolutely. And you can join the discussion as well. Do you take the bus, light rail, or train? What are your thoughts about the public transportation in your area? Give us a call, 410-662-8780. That's 410-662-8780. Or you can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Brian, we'll later talk about this report card that Central Maryland Transportation Alliance released in December that graded the Baltimore region's transit network. But first, the Maryland Department of Transportation released its $22 billion budget in late January. Tell us about the Consolidated Transportation Program and what does it cover?
Sure. It's a six-year budget, but they update it every year. So every year we look at a six-year window, and then after a year we roll it forward by year. So this one covers the years fiscal year 2026 through fiscal year 2031.
Okay.
And as you said, it's over $22 billion. And that doesn't even include the billions of dollars that the Maryland Transportation Authority spends on our toll facilities. Mm. So we're spending billions of dollars as a state every year on transportation. And that has huge implications for how we all get around, the air we breathe, our quality of life, our economy, et cetera.
Now, from your organization, the CMTA's perspective, what does this budget signal about the state's priorities when it comes to transit?
So there was a big push in the last two legislative sessions to raise revenue for the Maryland Department of Transportation, and they were successful. So a lot more taxpayer money is flowing into the coffers of the Maryland Department of Transportation, and this budget shows increased spending, but not to expand the Maryland Transit Administration, not to improve the bus system or build the red line that some people talk about. Instead, what they are prioritizing is projects like widening Interstate 81 and widening US 15 and widening Interstate 97. That's where their priorities lie.
And you express your concerns about the budget not fully funding the bus system and the Baltimore bus plan. For listeners who may not be familiar with the Be More bus plan, what is that?
The Be More bus plan, it came out last summer. The Maryland Transit Administration put it out, and that's them doing their job. They're supposed to tell us how they can make the system work better. I think we're going to, you know, we heard your listeners that you interviewed talking about how things could be better. Mm-hmm. MTA has a plan to make it better, to run the buses more frequently so that when you're at the stop, you don't wait as long. When you have to transfer, the next bus is coming along quicker. And so we get to our destination faster and more reliably if we implement that plan. Right now, though, it's just a plan and it's not funded.
Okay. And there's a lesser amount of money in the budget for the bus plan, what state officials are calling a, quote, down payment. Will this down payment be a good start for future expansion of funds?
It's far too little. It's $14 million, which is about 2% of the capital cost of the plan. If you look up the Be More Bus plan on the internet, the last page of it shows a timeline for implementing it, mm-hmm. and it's 10 plus years. We need improvements sooner.
Yes.
And we need the governor to take this more seriously and make it a priority. And so 2% of the project cost over the next 6 years is budget speak for, I'm not making this a priority. Mm-hmm. This is not serious. We want to see much more funding to and a plan to implement that in the next 5 or 6 years.
Now, part of this small down payment is supposed to go towards a future fifth bus depot for the city. Officials saying the four bus depots that exist are overrun. Why is that important?
Yeah, so every night the buses, or every time the bus finishes its run, it goes back to one of the four divisions, and they are badly in need of updates. They're filled to capacity. We can't run more frequent bus service with these four because they're already overcrowded. So those four need updating. That's not funded either. And the MTA has identified a site for a fifth bus division, which would give them the capacity to run more service. It's kind of wonky inside baseball stuff, but it's necessary if we're going to have better bus service.
Now, other major cities are doing significantly better when it comes to reliability and transportation. What are they doing differently, and is it all funding related?
Well, you know, there have been a lot of challenges across the country on public transportation, especially in 2025, as the COVID relief money that the U.S. government provided when the COVID pandemic set in, people stopped riding and transit agencies needed help, and the federal government stepped in. And that money lasted for a few years, but in 2025, it started running out. And so a lot of transit agencies struggled with that. But that being said, places like, I grew up in the Seattle area, and Seattle has been growing bus ridership. They've now been building several light rail lines, and they're seeing the percentage of trips that are made in the city mm-hmm. by driving alone go down, even while the population is growing and the economy is growing. So that's a recipe for success. Everybody wins then, because then when you do need to drive somewhere, the road isn't clogged with traffic. But you also have alternatives for making shorter trips by other means, like walking or catching a bus or riding a bike.
Now, Baltimore is a major city. Why do you feel here there isn't an urgency to prioritize funding for the transportation system compared to other major cities?
I think one thing that is challenging for Baltimore public transportation is that it is run by the state government. And there's no board, it's just the governor. Mm. And even a governor who loves Baltimore City, ostensibly, functionally has to worry about voters statewide. And about 70% of Maryland voters live outside the footprint of the MTA's core service area. They don't live near an MTA local bus route. They don't live near the light rail or the metro subway. And so when the governor is you know, holding their finger up to the wind and figuring out which way the political winds are blowing, 70% of their voters probably prioritize some other kind of investment over investing in the public transportation system. And I believe that has worked against us for decades. And that's why we haven't seen expansion since the late 90s, while so many peer regions are expanding their public transportation systems.
This is Midday. I'm Erica Kane. I'm here with Brian O'Malley, longtime CEO and president of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance, discussing the current state of public transit in Baltimore. General Assembly is in session. At this point in the budget process, can the General Assembly still step in to address the funding gap for the Be More Bus Plan?
Yes. The voters of Maryland gave the General Assembly more power to make changes to the budget a few years ago. And the General Assembly will hold budget hearings throughout the next few weeks. In fact, several of us are going down to testify at the hearings about the MTA's budget. And we will be asking them and the governor to fix this budget before it gets a final vote towards the end of the legislative session in late March.
How are you feeling about this? Do you feel hopeful that some changes can be made?
I do. We've seen the elected officials from Baltimore City, whether they're in local government like the mayor and city council members, or in the city's delegation to Annapolis, like our state senators and House members, speaking with one voice saying funding this needs to be a priority. I think we have a lot of dynamic leaders there, and they're using their platforms to push for this. And so I am optimistic that we're going to see change.
Now, let's say, just playing devil's advocate, you go out there, you push for this General Assembly. Nothing changes this session. Where does that leave the Be More Bus plan moving forward?
Well, it just puts it on a really slow path. It doesn't mean we can't come back next year and demand it. But, you know, I know you're going to talk to some high school students, and, you know, the path that it's on right now, they're going to be finished with college before we see these improvements hit the streets. Mm. That's too slow. That's too long to wait. We have people trying to get to school today, and we're hurting their futures by making it difficult for them to get to school on time and reliably. We're hurting the futures of a lot of households where workers are struggling to get to job opportunities. So we need these bus improvements. 10 years ago would have been best.
Yeah.
Tomorrow is the next best option. But waiting 10 years is a bad choice.
Now, there are parts of this budget that your organization, the CMTA, has praised. One is the total reboot of the light rail system. Why is that so important?
Yeah, and we thank the General Assembly and the governor for funding that. That was important. The light rail system was put in place in the 1990s, and the light rail cars are designed, you know, they say the projected useful life is about 30 years, so they're at or reaching their projected useful life, and we know there have been a lot of struggles with them. They're also, they have these steps that you have to go up, and so they're difficult. They're not very accessible for people. You have to climb up these steps. If you're using a wheelchair, pushing a stroller, you have to use one of the ramps, and it's challenging. And the new cars, the modernization project, will replace those with cars that are modern, more reliable, and also level floor boarding, so you can just roll in on and off from the platform like you see in, for example, the Washington, D.C. metro system.
Okay. In addition to accessibility, what does the reboot mean for riders in terms of reliability, speed, frequency?
So it will be more reliable because we're upgrading old equipment, but it doesn't necessarily increase the speed or frequency. We need additional investment to make the trains come faster and more frequently.
And the budget also completes the replacement of the subway fleet, a big milestone for Baltimore.
Yeah, I got to attend the ribbon cutting. Very exciting. New Metro subway cars are being phased in now. They'll be phased in throughout this year, which is standard for transit agencies. But that will make the cars brighter, more comfortable for riders, and definitely more reliable because we're replacing equipment that was put into service in the 1980s.
So, okay.
It's time.
A subway ridership is reportedly up. I'm sure this, amongst other things, are driving the increase. How can the state build on that momentum?
So the first thing we have to do is consistently fund our state of good repair. We lose ridership when we have breakdowns. And you know, your listeners might remember, for example, in 2018, the Metro subway shut down for an entire month on like one day's notice, you know, 24 hours notice, because of problems with the tracks. And so that's the result of years and years of kicking the can down the road in these budgets of not properly funding the state of good repair needs. So it's a lesson to grow ridership. Job one is consistently fund state of good repair. And then job two is find ways to make the service faster, more frequent, and more reliable. And that's what we're talking about with Be More Bus and other improvement plans.
The MTA announced a number of operational changes last fall. These included increasing frequency on some routes, making bus rides free for those under the age of 12. The changes followed the Baltimore Banner's investigation into the city bus system, letting down its youngest riders. Do you think these changes make a difference?
Yes, but it needs to be better. We need to do more. It's a step in the right direction, and I think Be More Bus would be a significant step in the right direction. So it's certainly nothing to say job done or mission accomplished about. We have a lot of work to do, and the system, you talk to any young people and they'll tell you that they're still struggling with buses not coming when they're supposed to, not getting reliable information over the transit app and other issues. So job not done.
I spoke to some commuters this week in Park Heights while waiting for the bus. Here's what Michelle had to say.
They really do need to put more buses on the line. It used to be, of course, prior to COVID. We all know COVID affected everything, but they're increasing the bus fare every year. But, you know, the service is getting more limited every year. So when the money, the fares are going up, the service is decreasing because we're out here, we're waiting longer. They don't have a lot of buses on schedule. I mean, you know, they don't control where the bus drivers are calling out and things like that that happens at any workplace. But, you know, we're out here and we're waiting, trying to get to work. They don't show up. We're late, or they send all of these school buses, three coming back to back, and we're still waiting to get one to get across town. And if one doesn't show up, then that one is super crowded and we can't even get on it because there's too many people on the bus.
Increases on bus fares, decrease on service. So bus fares increased in 2022 to $2. Is affordability an issue for the transit system?
There are concerns about it. Generally, public transportation is much more affordable than owning a car. And so the most important thing we can do is make that affordable option work reliably and efficiently for folks. There used to be legislation requiring increasing the bus fares based on an inflation index. Mm-hmm. And Delegate Mark Edelson and Senator Shelley Hettleman sponsored a bill that passed that stopped that. So now the MTA doesn't have to automatically increase fares every couple of years. But the most important thing we can do is make the bus, which is already very affordable compared to driving or taking Lyfts and Ubers, make it work better.
I'm on with Brian O'Malley, CEO and president of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance. Let's talk about this report card, Brian. Mm. Your organization, the CMTA, released its annual report card of transit in the greater Baltimore area. It awarded the region a D, a failing grade. What were the biggest issues?
Yeah, we started doing this report card 10 years ago in 2015, and the most recent edition just came out. Folks can find it on our website at www.cmtalliance.org. And the biggest issues, we base the grade is actually an average of 12 grades. We grade 12 things. And the worst ones are air pollution. Mm-hmm. We had too many days during 2024 when the air was unhealthy for your lungs, for human lungs to breathe, based on pollutants from tailpipe emissions. Mm. Another one was job access by transit. You can get to more than 100% of the jobs in the Baltimore region in an hour or less by car. I say more than 100% because you can also drive to jobs in the Philadelphia and Washington region in less than an hour by car. But if you're relying on public transportation to get to a job, the percent you can get to keeps going down. And in our latest report card, it's 7.5%. So your world of opportunity just shrank by more than tenfold if you don't have access to a car to commute. And then we also have too many neighborhoods that are cut off from opportunity where more than a quarter of all workers are spending 45 minutes or more getting to a job. That's a sign that the transportation system is not effectively connecting them to job opportunities.
Okay, we have a call from Eric in Baltimore. Eric, hello. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. Thank you very much for taking the call. Mr. O'Malley, I very much appreciate your efforts. It seems to me that I find it just incredible that we can't get state politicians to think much more broadly about this. I mean, our system in the city and the state both are really disgraceful. It has to be. It just has to be said that way. I commute to Annapolis 3 days a week. I'm an adjunct professor at the Naval Academy. It often takes. I took me 2 hours to get to Annapolis the other morning. I drop off my son, my youngest son, at City College High School. On the days when I'm not at the Naval Academy, I teach up at the University of Delaware, which is 16 miles farther. It takes much less time to get there, but there too, there's no train, and that's because the only section of the Northeast Corridor between New London, Connecticut, and Spotsylvania in Virginia that does not also have, in addition to Amtrak service, does not also have a local regional commuter system, is the 20 miles between Perryville, Maryland, and Newark, Delaware. The amount of time I waste that I could be doing some work, riding a train, the amount of time my kids have had to waste taking buses, my four kids have all gone to public schools. A couple of them went across town to Bard High School. We live in the northeast corner of town. 2 hours, often an hour and a half, to go across town, 8 or 9 miles. I can drive to the Philadelphia Museum of Art in that amount of time. I mean, this is not worthy of a 19th century system. And this is...
Eric, thank you so much for calling in. So listen, the current state of public transit here is obviously grinding Eric's gears. What do you have to say to that, Brian?
Yeah, I sympathize. Thanks for the call, Eric, and thanks for sharing all those concrete examples of the way it's affecting you and your family. I think we need to shift our priorities. I think we've spent the better part of 60 years or more widening highways and building out a world-class highway network, and we need to maintain that. But I think it's time to stop spending so much on widening highways in a endless chasing our tails effort to solve traffic by widening and widening. It doesn't reduce traffic congestion. It results in more and more driving. About half of all trips in the U.S. by car are 3 miles or less. And that's why our roads are clogged, because it's not a viable option to make those short trips any other way. And we could change that. These are choices, and we could invest more in sidewalks, in bus systems, in bike lanes, and infrastructure to make those shorter trips more convenient. And not everyone has to do it, but if some people make those trips by biking or walking or riding the bus, then those driving in the car face less traffic. Just ask drivers in Manhattan how they're feeling since congestion pricing went in. They're thrilled because there's fewer cars clogging up the road.
Now, there have been some improvements, right? What improvements have happened since the last report card?
Well, one place where we saw the grade get better was there's a grade for reliable transit. And I always brace myself when I say that, because a lot of people I say it to say, what? What you're experiencing now is... since the cyber attack, which made there was a cyber attack on the Maryland Department of Transportation in August of 2025, and it made a significant impact on a lot of the systems that affect reliable transit. What we measured for the report card was before that, and we had improved significantly. So it's really unfortunate that the cyber attack happened. I think the MTA is climbing out of that or fixing the things that were damaged from that. And I expect it to return to where it was last spring and summer soon. But the good news is that when we measured, it was improved from the previous report card, especially in terms of the reliability of the real-time signal that you get on your phone when you check an app like Google Maps or the transit app to see when the next bus is coming. That improved a lot.
Okay. I know you said that changes are needed now, but looking ahead 5 or 10 years, what would success look like for you in terms of public transit in the Baltimore region?
We should be celebrating the Be More Bus plan being implemented. Those buses should be coming more frequently. All of us would be waiting less time at the stops, would be getting where we're going quicker, and we would see ridership grow. And that would put the city on great footing to start planning more improvements to our transportation system.
And I think we're all hoping these improvements happen and happen soon. Brian O'Malley, thank you so much for being here. Brian is the CEO and president of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance. Thank you for joining us, Brian.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Coming up, we'll talk to Baltimore high school students who are organizing with their peers for better city bus service to school. It's Midday. I'm Erica Kane. Stay with us.
This is 88.1 WIPR.
Coming up on Monday, WYPR Afternoon host Gabe Ortiz guest hosts a roundup of the latest local news. We'll check out the Maryland gubernatorial race as Republican challengers prepare their campaign to unseat Governor Wes Moore. And we'll take a closer look at dueling legal opinions released by Mayor Brandon Scott and Ivan Bates. Plus, a look back at the Super Bowl with 105.7 The Fan's Cordell Woodland. That's on Monday. Today on Midday, we're talking about transportation. It's an important part of any city's infrastructure, and in Baltimore, it's twice as important for students because city buses are an important way kids get to and from school. An investigation by our news partners, the Baltimore Banner, revealed how significantly students were being let down by city buses and what it meant for their academic achievement. Kawan Wyatt is Program Director of Analysis and Engagement for the Fund of Education Excellence, a nonprofit that seeks to address inequality among Baltimore public school students. Welcome, Kawan.
Welcome, Erica. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And we're joined by two high school students engaged in advocacy with their peers for better transit access. Christian Holmes is a 12th grader at Baltimore City College. Welcome, Christian.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
And Justice LeGrand is an 11th grader at Baltimore School for the Arts. Welcome, Justice.
Hi. Thank you.
Now, to start, can each of you just briefly introduce yourselves and describe your connection to these transit issues? We'll start with Justice.
Hi. My name is Justice LeGrand, and my problem mainly with transit is just the unreliability and the time that it takes to get from places, regardless of the consistency of the transit. It's just always there's going to be a problem with it. So you got to plan out blocks of time just to get where you need to go.
And Christian?
Yeah, the same thing for me. It's just too unreliable and just takes too long to go anywhere or do anything.
Now, walk me through a typical school day, how you get to and from school.
I live pretty close to my school, so if I do miss the bus, I can walk, but catching the bus is just so stressful in the mornings. My bus that I take, the 94, it comes every 45 minutes about, so regardless of if I wake up too early or too late, I only can take one bus, because if I miss one, then I'm going to get to school either too early or too late regardless. So, I fully depend on a singular bus. If that bus is delayed or canceled at all, then I have to walk. So.
Because if you miss, if there's a transfer you miss, then your whole trip is thrown off and you will be late for school. What about you, Christian?
Yeah. So when I take the bus in the morning, I have to take two buses. I take the StudyLink Blue, Hopkins Bayview to the Green. Sometimes the Blue is really late, so I might take the 77 to the Pink. Like, there's a bunch of different ways, a bunch of different routes I do to get to school to try and limit my commute time because there's so many buses I can take, but I do have to take two or three buses to get to school.
And what are your peers saying about the bus system?
They hate it.
Yeah, nobody likes the bus system, especially the transit app. It's just you get to school in the morning and you hear at least five complaints like in your morning about missing a bus or buses being delayed.
Now, you mentioned being late for school. Has there ever been a time when transportation problems affected you so directly that you missed a major opportunity or it really affected you in terms of school?
One time I got to school at lunchtime. That was pretty deep.
Wow.
Because the bus, it was not coming. So I was like, okay, well, I'll take this other bus. And at the time I was new to transit and I was relying on the transit app. And I had to be a sophomore, so I was like maybe like 16, 15 years old. And I couldn't call anyone because everybody was at work. And I got there at lunchtime. So 10:30 at the time was my lunch. And I remember getting to school and I was like, thank God I made it. I didn't know if I would make it today. I was thinking about going home at that point.
So, Kawan, you hear what students are going through, going to and from school every day. How do you get connected with the students, and how do students get involved with this effort?
Yes, in 2021, the Fund for Educational Excellence, we produced a report called Not in Service. So we had an opportunity to talk to hundreds of students and hear stories similar to what you hear from Christian and Justice. And, you know, as a result of that, we saw a need for there to be a change and for there to be advocacy. It's one thing for us to speak on the behalf of young people, but we know that youth participatory action is the way to really change things. So we created an organization, through our organization, a program called the Student Transit Advocacy Cohort, which these two are a part of, where they get a chance to advocate on behalf of themselves and really rally their peers for change.
And we hear the term transportation access. What does that mean in real everyday terms?
In everyday terms, it's young people being able to get to school without having to worry about missing their first period class, without having to stand outside for 45 minutes to an hour when it's cold and it's inclement weather, or if they're being subjected to gender-based harassment and not knowing when a bus is going to come and having to be subjected to that. It's them being able to engage with extracurricular activities without their parents being concerned about them getting home so late at night that they may have to remove them from certain opportunities.
I'm Erica Kane. This is Midday on WYPR. I'm speaking with Kawan Wyatt of the Fund for Educational Excellence and two high school students, Justice LeGrand, an 11th grader at Baltimore School for the Arts, and Christian Holmes, a 12th grader at Baltimore City College. Christian, what would a transportation system that truly works for Baltimore City students, what would that look like for you ideally?
I'm probably getting to school in like 30 minutes. Ideally, it would be going to the bus stop, and my transit app reads 5 minutes and it comes in 5 minutes. Ideally, it would be clicking the little bus icon on the transit app and it says it's two stops away. I look down the street and it's actually there. That's what that looks like for me.
Now, you guys are so young and your voice is so strong. Is it just because you're just so angry with the bus service that you wanted to get involved? What motivated you to get involved in local affairs at such a young age?
Well, I heard about the opportunity through a friend, but really just the opportunity to make a change for this system that so obviously does not work for me and for my peers and my friends. It's just so important for young people to get their voices out, especially regarding things that affect them. And I think it's important and working. We were recently at a transit rally where we were able to share our voices and our stories about what's so bad about transit right now and what needs to be changed.
Now, Kawan, you're working with students and students like Justice and Christian that want to make a change, that want to get out, that want to organize. What can they do?
I think it's important for them to connect themselves to opportunities where they can really have a platform to voice their opinions and share their story and shift the narrative. I think sometimes people don't understand what young people go through. And so shifting the narrative and making it clear that young people aren't missing school because they're not motivated. It's just they're in a system that structurally has them disadvantaged. I'm fortunate to work with young people who are overachievers and highly motivated, so they're going to figure out a way. But there are some young people who don't have the same support systems that maybe Christian and Justice have. And dealing with whatever they're going through in their personal lives, being outside, not being able to get to school on time, it's 20 degrees, no bus stop to stand at. That could be the tipping point where they might just say, hey, I can't do it today.
And as students, how do you organize to make these changes?
Well, one of the things that really helps is having the Fund for Educational Excellence, their support, and giving us a space to meet and opportunities to meet with adults and people who work for transit and advocate for transit. But other than that, just like talking to your peers and your friends and getting them to show up for rallies and getting them to reach out to legislators and find out who your delegates are and email them. Really just like this communication and this push for change from a group of people, just getting people involved is the most important thing.
Yeah, definitely. And like using social media as well. Like we created a survey and we were able to get that survey over 100 kids and 100 people.
We're close to 200 now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just through social media alone. So using our social media presence, using our network and being like, come out and support us, come out. Whether you ride transit or you don't ride transit, because you know someone who does.
And what has the response been like?
A lot of people complaining about the unreliability, a lot of people complaining about gender-based harassment, a lot of people complaining about how, you know, it's not always safe. We live in a pretty big city. It's not always safe to be outside. It's even more unsafe when you don't know when you're going to get inside, you know?
Especially at the times that most students are taking buses, either after school or after extracurriculars, it's going to be late. And one of the main complaints we heard is the safety issue with without unreliable buses running, you're stuck outside in the dark maybe for like 30 minutes to like over an hour at a time. And that just puts you in a vulnerable position, especially as a young student. And so that's one of the main things that I think reliability would help with, and consistency with bus times.
And you mentioned gender-based harassment, which just shameful that anyone has to go through anything like that. What other patterns do you see across schools when it comes to transportation inequity also?
Yeah, really just we have a school choice system. So it's an opportunity for anyone in any part of the city to go to any school that they think would be appropriate for them to achieve their dreams and their goals. If you can't get to a school, you can't realistically attend it, you know. One of our students who was a part of our CEO student cabinet and our student transit advocacy cohort, when we went to Annapolis on this past Monday, came up with some of the slogans that we had when they were at the rally chanting. And it's, if you want a stare, get a stare. I think that's such a poignant statement. These young people in 2 weeks organized a group of 40 students to go to Annapolis in partnership with Paul Sturm and Better Transit Now to rally on the State House and let legislators know that this is an issue for young people in Baltimore.
Now, you attended Morgan State?
That's correct.
Okay. So I know you've done work with your peers in terms of advocacy. What made you want to reach out and connect with the young people, the young students that wanted to have their voices heard? How was that connection made?
Yeah, well, I remember catching the bus. It used to be the 55 to the 3 getting to Morgan, and that was tough for all 4 years when I was at Morgan. But I remember being a young person, and there was a teacher named Mr. Dennis who helped me create a student-led organization called Scholars Improving Communal Awareness. And I always remember him and that experience and how powerful I felt being able to impact change. And I think it's a cool thing to be able to try to do the same thing for young people in Baltimore City.
And so what are some of the goals this year for the Fund for Educational Excellence?
Yeah, so we got a number of really cool programs that the young people are a part of. As I mentioned, the Student Transit Advocacy Cohort. We had this successful turnout at the rally that they were a part of. We also have the CEO Student Cabinet. Christian mentioned the survey. The young people, since they're a part of the CEO Cabinet, they'll get a chance to meet with Dr. Santelises on a quarterly basis. They meet with her, and they'll share some of the findings from that report with her and hopefully see if we can impact change from the inside of a system. We just finished with... we had a museum exhibit at the Peel Museum that was transit-based. Christian was also a part of that, where we had 8 young people curate a museum exhibit from scratch and really hammer home how transit impacts young people and really shift the narrative through art. So just thinking of different ways to be creative.
I'm here with Kawan Wyatt of the Fund for Educational Excellence and 2 high school students, Justice LeGrand, an 11th grader at Baltimore School for the Arts, and Christian Holmes, a 12th grader at Baltimore City College. Justice and Christian, for other students that are listening, that are dealing with the same issues every day, what would you want them to know?
I'd just say you do have a voice. Like, if you see the problems that are happening with this system that just does not work for students specifically, Come reach out to people who can make that change. Organize groups. Like, we've had a lot of protests going on in the city lately. We can add to that. Just really advocate for these struggles that you have every single day, getting to and from school, getting to sports and work and extracurriculars. Just advocate for yourself. Reach out to legislators. Reach out to delegates. Really make your voices heard and bring awareness to the problems that we are having.
Yeah. I would also like to say that you are not alone, and it should not be this way. We do not have to accept this type of treatment, period. I want students to recognize and know that it is a system, and this system is not always designed with us in mind. And it's not supposed to be this way. The things that you struggle with, trying to go to school, trying to go to work, trying to go home, trying to access certain programs, certain opportunities that you can't access, we are in a system that is created, and that system can suck sometimes, and it sucks, and it should not be this way. And the only way that we're going to be able to fix it is if you come out, if you share your voice, if you share your story. There are so many different kids in the city who are doing so many different things and so many great things, and just coming out, just to come, make a sign, post it, come out, support us, Yeah.
And Kawan, how can folks support the Fund for Educational Excellence?
I would say just continue to support the young people that they are connected to is the best way. You know, there's so many amazing young people doing great things across the city, and they just need platforms. I think what we're trying to do with the fund is provide platforms for young people to be able to express themselves, to have a seat at the table, and to understand that the power that they yield is real. I think that everyone else in the city as adults have to find ways to do that in their own little way as well.
Okay. Kawan Wyatt, Program Director of Analysis and Engagement for the Fund of Education Excellence. Thank you so much for being here. Christian Holmes, a 12th grader at Baltimore City College, and Justice LeGrand, an 11th grader at Baltimore School for the Arts. I have to say, as a parent, I'm so proud of you both. And not only am I looking forward to what you both are going to do with this organization, but just to see what you both are going to do as individuals, because I can just see the greatness in both of you. So for whatever you choose to do and whatever path you take, just keep going and keep striving. Okay, thank you so much for being here. They're a part of a group of students that are advocating for better transit options to and from school. And on February 23rd, they're headed to the State House to make their case to lawmakers. So thank you so much for joining us, and good luck in Annapolis later this month.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Up next, amid a ramp up in immigration and customs enforcement operations, public outcry over a massive new detention center near Hagerstown. We'll learn more about that after the break. I'm Erica Kane. This is Midday. Stay with us.
This is 88.1 WIPR.